Just in and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Any player that's up to negotiation, they have an obligation to support and represent the rest of the NFL and where this game is going. And I think Mr. Jones just said it. This contract shows where this game is going financially, right? Not just in the quarterback position, but in all the positions. So obviously, years later, when I'm back at it, it'll be in different circumstances. But I think I had a responsibility and obligation to the other quarterbacks and to the other men and even the guys on my team to get this done.
Dak Prescott from Wednesday announcing the new contract, finally, between Dak and the Dallas Cowboys.
Mike, what are you going to do with yourself? What are you going to do? What are you going to talk about for the next 8 years? You made a cottage industry of Dak Prescott.
Hey, Peter, we're 3 years away from the Cowboys being on the clock to have to renegotiate or see him walk away as an unrestricted free agent. This is not over. This is not over. Round one is over. Round two is looming. I got two things to say, though, based on that clip. He made reference at one point to a comment from Jerry Jones about, and Jerry bought into this narrative, this goofy narrative that popped up, that they did this deal because Jerry has some sort of inside information that no one has about who would have guessed the NFL making a bunch of money under the next wave of TV deals. Like, that's some justification for losing their shirt at the poker table with Dak Prescott. It's bizarre, but it makes sense because Jerry can't sit up there and say, hey, I lost my shirt at the poker table with Dak Prescott. He's got to make it look like he wanted to do it. He meant to do it. We all know that a huge influx of cash is coming. That's not why this deal was done, Peter. This deal was done because Prescott refused and waited and declined every offer they made. They misread the room. They overplayed their hand, and they undersold Dak Prescott until they had no choice but to give him 4 years, $160 million, a contract that in many ways is the best contract any NFL player has ever signed.
Yeah, it was a very interesting negotiation, Mike. And as you say, you know, this contract, you know, 2 years ago could have gotten done for, pick a number, 32? I don't know. It could have gotten done for a far more reasonable number than this one. And having said that, if you look at the cap number that he played for in 2020, and then you look at what he's going to get in the next 4 years or next 3 years plus a renegotiation, Dak Prescott won. He won by holding the line and by doing what he said he was going to do. You know, he never preached this. He basically let his agent, Todd France, handle this. But he basically was never going to take, you know, 85 cents on the dollar because he was, quote, a Dallas Cowboy, and that's worth so much.
Well, and the reality for the Cowboys is they should have swooped in the moment the window opened on a second contract for Dak Prescott. Right. And technically, the window opened on completion of the 2018 regular season. That day, as soon as that game's over, you can sign him to a new contract. Even before the playoff game, they had a wild card game against the Seahawks that year that they won. Then they lost to the Rams the following week in the divisional round. That's when the window opens to do that second deal. And one thing we've learned through this Dak Prescott exercise is the longer you wait, the more expensive it gets. and it will get expensive to the point where you have no choice but to make him the highest paid player on value at signing in league history at $40 million. You have to make him a record signing bonus offer of $66 million, record payout in year one of $75 million, record full guarantee at signing of $95 million, because the alternative was you pay him $37.68 million this year and he becomes a free agent next year as a practical matter. The counterbalance to that, though, Peter, is Jared Goff, because the Rams surely wish they hadn't paid Jared Goff after 3 years. So it's ultimately incumbent on the team first to know this is our guy and then to mobilize and make him an offer he can't refuse now, because later it's going to be ridiculously more expensive than it is now. And that's the challenge faced by the Ravens with Lamar Jackson, the Bills with Josh Allen, and the Browns with Baker Mayfield. Question one, is this our guy? If the answer is yes, break the bank now, because the bank is going to be broken and the vault is going to be emptied later.
Yeah, and I think, Mike, there's a lesson to be learned here, okay? And here's the lesson. If you wait and you make somebody, you know, either the highest paid in history or close to it, you have to understand that in many cases, that is your fault. And in this case, I'm blaming Jerry and Stephen Jones. It was their fault that it got to this number because they waited. And the one thing that you know about quarterback contracts, Mike, is that the number never goes down. And it's not necessarily that you pay the best guy the most money. You don't do that. Remember back in 2013, Joe Flacco, I'm going to play it out. I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to do that. So what happens? He becomes the NFL's first $20 million player. So just imagine this, Mike, in the span of probably a little bit less than 8 years, the NFL quarterback king has gone, and the salary of a quarterback in the NFL, the top guy, has gone from 20 to 40. And even more than that, really, because I don't know how really you consider Patrick Mahomes' contract, you know, because spread out over such a long period of time, I don't know how fair it is to compare it to a 4-year contract for like a Mahomes
Dak.
But yeah, Dak, right. But when you think about these contracts, Mike, the biggest thing is that they never go in reverse. And for as smart as Jerry Jones is, I think he totally misread the field 2 years ago, and then even a year ago, he misread it.
Look at that payout. The first 4 years of the current contract, Dak gets $160 over the first 4 years of this contract. The other quarterbacks, the first 4 years of their current contracts, the numbers pale in comparison. There's Mahomes at $103.6 million for the first 4 years of his deal. Peter, I said last year that if the Cowboys had taken the Mahomes contract and just crossed out Chiefs and put in Cowboys and crossed out Mahomes and put in Prescott and handed Dak Prescott last year before the July 15 deadline, because Mahomes did his deal before that deadline, Prescott would have said no thank you. And people lost their minds. How can you say that? It's a $500 million contract. Well, yeah, if you sign for long enough, of course it's going to be a $500 million contract. He committed for a dozen years. Dak is going to get $160 million. Or more likely, he's going to get $126 million over three and then get another contract. Either way, Mahomes is still going to be laboring under this deal, relying on the generosity and the charity of Clark Hunt in ripping up the contract. Not every owner is going to rip up a contract when it becomes obsolete. You think Jerry Jones, if he had a quarterback and that cost certainty baked in for the next 11 years and the market changed, the cap goes up, other players making more, you think Jerry is going to rip that thing up and say, we'll just give you more money because we feel like it? Now, a holdout could force him, like it did with Emmett Smith in 1993, to act and to fix it. But you don't want to have that commitment and just hope that the owner of the team, who didn't get that level of money by giving it away, is going to, out of the kindness and goodness of his heart, tear up your contract. you want the contract to automatically end. And it's always better to get back to the trough again and again and again. And that's what makes this deal so good for Dak, Peter. He got all those records, record signing bonus, record first-year payout, record full guarantee at signing, and he's only committed for 4 years. And as I said, he's going to be back after three, and we're going to be doing this again. He said he's a Cowboy for life the other day. No, he's a Cowboy for four more years. And then he's got the leverage to squeeze even more out of them under this threat that maybe he won't be a Cowboy 4 years from now.
I think Patrick Mahomes basically did what Tom Brady did all those years in New England, which, you know, back in 2004 when he did his second contract, or 2005, one of those 2 years, when he did his second contract, he basically told the Patriots, essentially, listen, I'm not going to be a pig here, but I want to make sure that you guys spend to the cap and use the money, whatever I leave here, you know, on players and spend to the cap every year. And basically, the Patriots did that. And that lasted. That was Brady's thing over the years. You know, he never was a pig, you know, and not to say that's the wrong word to say, but he never got absolutely the max value for himself in New England. He never did, preferring to basically say to the team, as long as you spend the money on the rest of the team, I'm okay. And that, to me, when I saw the Patrick Mahomes contract, after the initial, whoa, can you believe that? After that, you basically say, when you look at it like 6, 7, 8 years down the road, you know, those numbers that he's going to be making, even though they're $48 million or whatever it is, that could be like 12% of the cap then. So, you know, to me, Mahomes did something that was very, very team friendly, even though everybody would say, are you out of your mind? But he did.
Well, and that's where Dak's point that he had some sort of an obligation to maximize his earnings as a favor to other quarterbacks elsewhere, that by getting the absolute most. And this is true. When you push it as far as you can, you, number one, you put the bar higher so the next guy can jump it, but you also give other guys a chance to fall in behind. So the more Dak gets, the more these other guys can get. Tom Brady consistently didn't push it, and it made it harder. And there was a period, Peter, from about 2013 to 2017 where the quarterback market stagnated. And part of that was Brady was clearly the best quarterback in that time, and he didn't push for every last penny. And it makes it harder for lesser quarterbacks to push for more when Tom Brady is making X. It makes it harder for guys on the Patriots to get paid when Tom Brady's taking less, and it makes it harder for other quarterbacks. But speaking of the Patriots and quarterbacks, Peter, there is news. Boston Globe reporting that the Patriots and Cam Newton have agreed to terms on a one-year deal. So one of the great mysteries, two of the great mysteries, really, of the looming offseason are solved. Cam is off the market, and the Patriots apparently have their quarterback for 2021.
I'm a bit mystified by this, but, you know, it must come down to the fact that New England looks at its options and says, Jimmy Garoppolo, do we really love him enough to make a huge trade for him? No, we really don't. We're drafting 15th. Do we really love Mac Jones enough to, A, risk that he'll be there at 15 or trade up to make sure we get him or any of the quarterbacks? And so I look at the Patriots and I look at this move and I said, it's a pragmatic move, you know, because I just saw this too. It's a pragmatic move because they didn't think they could do better.
Well, that's right. They didn't think they could do better. And with the opportunity of a full year to work with Cam Newton, maybe it will be better. The COVID-19 issue, he denied having any type of brain fog, but he's later said that that illness affected him throughout the course of the season. That derailed things at a time when they were looking like they could move in the right direction, that this could work out. So maybe a reset, another chance, another opportunity. And when you consider the money that they have, and who knows what they're going to pay Cam Newton. They ended up getting him last year, Peter, for a final price. When you consider all the incentives, per game roster bonuses, etc., they got him for $3.7 million last year. I don't know yet. I haven't seen what they're going to pay him this year. But they've got the money to spend elsewhere. They were smart about the cap. They're one of the teams that wishes the cap was lower because they planned for a significant reduction in the salary cap because of the pandemic. They want it lower for strategic reasons because it's going to help them if it's lower. They still have the money to spend. They put some players around Cam Newton. They were 7-9 last year despite all of the struggles. They're not far away from being a team that could be competitive and relevant and playoff bound in 2021.
And, you know, look, this only happens if Bill Belichick is sold on Cam Newton. And you know what this does to me, Mike? This says to Cam Newton that, hey, one of the greatest coaches in the history of team sports saw you have, to be charitable, a mediocre year in 2020. And then he thought enough of you to want round two, you know, to have a second year with Cam Newton. And, you know, the other thing that this does, Mike, and so my point is that Cam Newton must say, okay, I'm playing for this guy, and I'm going to leave no stone unturned this offseason to be fantastic for this guy. But I'll tell you what else this does, Mike, because the Patriots, obviously, with, you know, whatever they have, $68 million, according to over the cap, available under the cap. Cam obviously is not going to take a lot of that. So what this does is it says to the Patriots, okay, now you have such horrible weapons. You got terrible weapons now. Go get Kenny Golladay and Jonnu Smith. Rebuild your wide receiver and tight end rooms right now, this year. You want to be a contender next year? Go get those two guys, or go get a really good receiver and a really good tight end, because right now you do not have weapons befitting even a borderline playoff team.
Well, but the Patriots rarely go out and spend right out of the gates in free agency. I recall two guys for whom they paid market value, Adalius Thomas in 2007-ish, that didn't work out. And then Stephon Gilmore a few years ago when he left the Bills, that did work out. I think that what the Patriots will do instead, like they typically do, let the market soften and go out and buy up a bunch of these guys we talked about last hour who aren't going to be getting big money, and you convince them to come to New England. Now, New England doesn't have the shine that it once did, but it's still a place where you know you're going to contend, you're going to compete, you're going to more likely than not be relevant. And hey, there's a lot of guys in the NFL who respect Cam Newton, and a lot of guys in the NFL who are going to want to play with Cam Newton, and that's going to help them as well. But I think the Patriots may be able to go out and bargain shop like never before to round up guys who can come in and for a relatively low price, for real value. You said last week, When a Gabe Jackson is available, you're gonna compare him to who you have on the roster, dollar for dollar. Who can I get at a cheaper price? And you're gonna have some guys currently on the team who think they're gonna be on the team who aren't gonna be on the team because they're gonna get supplanted by one of these other guys who is a better bargain when you look at the cap dollars invested in getting that player.
If the Patriots do that, Mike, then to me, And I don't deny that you're right. And I, on the one hand, I hate this sort of everybody leaping out there to sign this year's bright, shiny object. More often than not, it ends up hurting your team. And I guess if the Patriots do wait, then they wait for, say, John Brown and Jared Cook, you know, instead of sitting there right then and basically saying, we're going to go shop at the top of the market. If they wait 2 weeks, then they go get guys either for one-year contracts who are good players, or, you know, maybe a 2 or 3 year contract, but guys who they don't view as being permanent guys, but just upgrades over what they have right now. It's going to be interesting to see if Belichick breaks his own mold.
You know, there was a report, one of the Sunday Splash reports, the final Sunday of the regular season, that Newton and the Patriots were expected to part ways. Belichick bristled at that after their season-ending game. And ever since then, we've gotten the indications Cam was willing to go back. Belichick praising Cam, and here it is. I'm really not surprised by it. I'm surprised it happened before Cam got a chance to see what was out there. But you know what? Here's the reality. He knows what's out there. When Matt Milano re-signed with the Bills yesterday, Matt Milano wasn't getting the interest in free agency. I was told recently that he thought he was going to get. The market's already open. The tampering has happened. And Cam Newton, there's no way his representation didn't call every other team that's looking for a quarterback and have the hypothetical conversation about a certain hypothetical 2015 league MVP who hypothetically is available to any team that hypothetically is looking for a quarterback. So he knows what's out there. He knows what's behind every other door before he takes what the Patriots are offering. That's how they got to this point before the market opened. Good for both sides to get it done. They know there's certainty, and now they can focus on other positions. And I was excited last year to see what Cam was going to do for New England when he arrived on short notice. This time around, he has maximum opportunity, whatever offseason program they have, maximum opportunity to get ready, second year in the offense. I like it. And I think that the Patriots will surprise people this year, and it's going to be the Patriots and Cam Newton hosting the Buccaneers and Tom Brady at some point during the 2021 regular season.
Mike, there's two other factors, Cam Newton going back to New England. Number one, because you really don't know if he's your long-term guy, all of a sudden, the Patriots can sit there with the 15th pick in the draft. And what happens if young Trey Lance from North Dakota State is there at pick 15? What do? Maybe they just take a long-term guy because most NFL people believe that Trey Lance probably needs a year of seasoning or maybe 2 years of seasoning after having a pretty inexperienced, Division I AA or FCS, whatever it's called, or FBS. I forget what that stuff is called. But the other thing that this does, Mike, is that it basically takes the New England Patriots out of the realm of, to me, trading up and trying to get a great quarterback in this draft, trying to get their dream quarterback. Now, that's one more team that needed a quarterback that has its question answered. Not to say that they ever were going to be in position for Deshaun Watson, but it is just one more team that could convince Nick Caserio, the longer I wait, the fewer candidates there are going to be.
And Trey Lance's pro day workout happens today. They can wait until one of the later rounds to get a guy that they can quietly groom and develop. That's typically how they've done things. Even Brady, if you haven't heard, at some point in the last 21 years was a low round pick. So, when you go all in with that first round quarterback, you're taking a chance, especially if you're giving up extra assets to trade up. And Bill Belichick is the kind of guy who wants to have maximum lottery tickets in the draft, not go all in and move up. And obviously Jarrett Stidham may be going the way of Brian Hoyer. Although you keep Stidham around, he's entering year three of a mid-round rookie deal. You can keep him around, keep him in the system, have him as an emergency option. But also I think, Peter, there's room there if they move on from Hoyer to have a young guy who's on the depth chart, who quietly and diligently spends this year learning the ropes, and then maybe in a year or two he can become the guy if they get someone who develops the way that a guy like Tom Brady developed 21 years ago. Not that lightning's ever going to strike twice in the same lifetime for the Patriots, but that's the model. You get a guy who doesn't have all the pressure and the expectation of being a first-round pick, who still has some skills, and you see whether and to what extent he can bring those skills out with a year or two on the bench.
The one last thing I would say about Newton and the Patriots is that, look, Belichick, I think, is really lucky right now to have Josh McDaniels as his sort of solid kind of aide-de-camp. And, it's not that Josh McDaniels is dictating what's going on, but this signing tells me that McDaniels really liked Cam. And he liked working with him. And he was a worker bee. So I think that the chemistry had to have been good in the quarterback room, which you always heard it was, and with Josh McDaniels. And I think probably Belichick and McDaniels both figure This is the best we can do to be a competitive team this year. And so, you know, you worry about this year, and then you worry about next year, next year. So I think the Patriots have always done that. And this is a great example of, we're not really going to be totally focused, you know, unless we get a quarterback who falls in our lap at 15. We're not going to be totally focused on this, you know, on 2022. All that matters is being as good as we can be this year.
Greg Bedard, who was one of your charter members at the Monday Morning Quarterback team back in 2013-ish. Did I get the year right? Was it 2013?
You did, yeah, 2013. Wow.
I shouldn't have asked then. I should have just kept going. Anyway, Bedard recently said on his podcast that Jimmy Garoppolo was the plan A for the Patriots at quarterback this year. And it's possible that that was still accurate. It's possible they just decided we can't wait for the 49ers to get their upgrade before they figure out what they're going to do with Garoppolo, because I believe the 49ers aren't going to let that bird out of their hand until they know they have someone better, whether it's trading for Sam Darnold, getting someone in the draft, whatever. The Patriots don't want to sit around and wait, because then Cam Newton's going to be gone. And this is why the advanced tampering can be useful. You get an idea of what's out there, what's not out there. And I think this is the first sign of why it's important. Even though Deshaun Watson wasn't going to go to New England, Russell Wilson's not going to go to New England, this is what happens when teams aren't going to wait around. Because when you wait around to go for what may be your plan A, if Bedard was accurate and Garoppolo was the plan A, you sit around and wait for plan A, you lose plan B. And we're going to see teams move to plan B if they don't think they have a good shot at plan A. That could quite well be what the Patriots did.
Hey, look, Greg really knows the Patriots, so I have full confidence in him when he says that. And I think the biggest thing with Garoppolo and what you're talking about with the timing is absolutely correct. But there was another scenario pointed out to me by somebody who knows the 49ers quite well. Trade the 43rd pick in the draft to the Jets and get Sam Darnold, okay? And don't trade Jimmy Garoppolo. Basically, keep Garoppolo around and know that, in essence, the hot breath of Sam Darnold is coming down his neck. And this is the year that will decide if you're the long-term quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers or if we move to Darnold or someone else. Because, Mike, everybody has always said, well, you know, if you get Darnold, you've got to guarantee that fifth year and all that. No, you don't. You know, that can be, Sam Darnold is smart enough to know that if they move away next year from Jimmy Garoppolo, he's smart enough to know, I've died and gone to heaven if I could work with Kyle Shanahan on a contending team every year. And so, are you going to take the last dime in a contract if you become a free agent? Not saying you would. Maybe in December of this year, they'd go after him hard and try to sign him. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm just simply saying that I do not think that trading for Sam Darnold would automatically mean end of days for Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco.
Here's the only problem with that scenario. When, as a practical matter, the cap is dropping $25 million from where it was supposed to be, it's one thing to focus on the reduction of 15.7, but it had gone up by $10 million every year since 2013. Teams were expecting another $10 million bump. 208 is what they were expecting. It's 182.5 instead. When you take a $25 million difference and throw on top of it Garoppolo making $25 million this year, that's too much to pay Garoppolo. If they're going to do that, they need to squeeze Garoppolo to take less. And that's why last week I was intrigued by the report that the 49ers had called the Panthers about Teddy Bridgewater, because Bridgewater's due to make $17 million this year. And I thought maybe that was a way to subtly open the door to the reality that the 49ers aren't going to pay Garoppolo $25 million this year, because let's face it, Peter, if they would cut him, no one's paying him $25 million this year. Not for a guy that's missed 23 games, more than he's won over the past 4 years.
Yeah, over the last 3 years. And Mike, the other way to look at that story is just simply to say that you know, because my belief is that Kyle Shanahan still really likes Garoppolo, but the realistic part of this story is that if he slips on a banana peel on October 1st and he's out for the year, they can't rely on the CJ Bethards of the world. You know, Nick Mullins, you can't rely on them anymore because they have shown they're nice backup quarterbacks, nice, but they're not winning elements on a, you know, on a playoff team. And like when the Eagles had Nick Foles, they knew that they could win playoff games with Nick Foles. Now, he's not the greatest quarterback in the world, but they knew that he was good enough to win playoff games. And in San Francisco, that's one of the reasons why I would go out and get on his rookie contract one more year of Sam Darnold. And I would say, hey, listen, I can't tell what's going to happen at the end of this year. I really can't. But for now, having a Garoppolo-Darnold combo platter in a football sense, not in a salary cap sense, but in a football sense, really makes you a better team.
There's one wild card in San Francisco, and I'm not suggesting that he's going to get the job or he's going to do enough to even stay on the roster, but they have Josh Rosen. Remember, he was content last year to be on the Tampa Bay practice squad, and then the opportunity arose to go to San Francisco, and he jumped at the chance to work with Kyle Shanahan. And in that system, there's a chance they develop the right relationship, the right chemistry, and if Rosen is smart enough to know that the path to success in Shanahan's offense is to do exactly what Shanahan wants, every way, every play, every read, every step, every throw, if he can figure that out and do it consistently, he's got a chance to be the guy. And that would be the steal of all steals, a top 10 quarterback from 2018 that you get on the street and you quietly groom behind the scenes into a quarterback that can be the answer for you over the long haul. Long way to go before that happens, but it just shows you that Shanahan has options. He knows how to work with quarterbacks. And bottom line is they're not ready to pull the plug on Garoppolo. So the Patriots, not able to wait for Garoppolo, pivot to Cam Newton. He will be back with New England, according to now multiple reports. Newton back to the Patriots on a one-year deal. When we return, speed round time looks at the teams with plenty of money to burn. Who should they be tampering with as free agency approaches? We'll do that next here on PFT Live.
Justin and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, look at the cap space that's available to the teams that either planned accordingly like the Patriots or the teams that just haven't been spending all that much and rolling it over like the Jaguars, the Jets, and the Colts. But of the teams that have the most to spend, what we're going to do now is say and predict which players general managers should be tampering with based upon this cap space. Let's start with the Jaguars. Coach Urban Meyer, GM Trent Baalke, $73.6 million in cap space. Who, Peter, should they already be discreetly on the phone with?
I'm going to be really boring right here, Mike. I'm going to say Jonnu Smith, the tight end from Tennessee, who I think is on the verge of exploding into one of the best tight ends in football. He already is very close to that. But I think he could be a top five tight end. And what you want to do with Trevor Lawrence is you want to say, we have a big target with excellent hands and a guy who can not only just troll the intermediate part of the field, he can also get downfield. I really like Jonnu Smith. I think he'd be a perfect guy for Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars.
You know, I'm fascinated by the extent to which Urban Meyer is going to try to round up some Ohio State guys. Michael Thomas not going anywhere in New Orleans. He's restructured his contract. It would have been too much to trade him anyway from a cap hit standpoint. I'm fascinated by the possibility that the Cowboys may part ways with Ezekiel Elliott. I think that's at least on the table now after the Dak contract. Could he make his way to Jacksonville? But for now, I'm going to say Joe Tooney. Get offensive linemen. Build some depth and some quality around your quarterback in order to keep your quarterback in one piece. But yeah, that's not all that sexy either. But you're getting the sexy pick with the first overall draft selection in Trevor Lawrence. All right, Joe Douglas of the Jets has $69.2 million in cap space. Who should he be on the phone with, Peter?
I want either Joe Tooney or I want Kevin Zeitler. I want, you know, last year what Joe Douglas did is he scotch-taped his offensive line, and it didn't work. And so now what I do if I'm Joe Douglas is I'm getting a guy for 3 or 4 years who I know I can plug and play with on a rebuilt offensive line, presumably with a new quarterback. I've already got Mekhi Becton at one of the tackles. I need to get two guys in free agency this year who can help me create a front that's going to basically allow a quarterback to succeed.
And Mekhi Becton did indeed work out well last year as a top 10 pick for the Jets. Douglas has been building from the inside out, which is smart. But one guy on the outside, and you've got the money to spend, and you have a new quarterback, presumably, if they go that route with Zach Wilson. I like Juju Smith-Schuster as a guy that maybe they should be talking to and seeing if they can get at a reasonable contract. Not a huge contract, but a reasonable contract. They clearly need help at the receiver position in New York. The Patriots and Bill Belichick, $68.5 million in cap space, although somewhat less now that they've redone the deal with Cam Newton and are keeping him around. Who should Belichick be calling other than his own guys?
I would call Kenny Golladay. To me, if I am Bill Belichick, I look at an absolutely weak part of my team and I say the best guy out there to be both a combination field stretcher, big-time producer at wide receiver is Kenny Golladay.
I'm going to say nobody. Because that's the way the Patriots do things. You're not going to pay anyone big money. You're going to wait, and you're going to wait, and you're going to go out, and you're going to get volume. You're going to get quantity and hope that the quantity collectively becomes quality. So we've only seen it twice for the Patriots, and I really don't see Bill Belichick using a big chunk of that money on one guy. So there's no one to tamper with at this point. You just wait and see how the market plays out, and then you go get the guys who are left. Colts and GM Chris Ballard. He's going to have Carson Wentz. He's got $46.6 million in cap space. Who should he be calling, Peter?
You know, that is the Colts are really interesting right now because I don't think they have a position on their team that is in huge trouble right now. I think the depth they've built up has been good. But if I'm them, the one position that I really think I could use a big-time addition is safety. And John Johnson with the Rams last year, look, you know, when Brandon Staley left the Rams last year, one of the things he was a little bit in mourning about is not being able to work with John Johnson anymore. He had the green dot on his helmet. He was the leader in that defensive huddle. And he's only 25 years old. Pro Football Focus is fifth-rated safety in 2020. I think he would be great in Indianapolis at the back of that secondary.
I'd at least be trying to get Trent Williams to come play left tackle for me. With Anthony Costanzo retiring, there's talk about Quentin Nelson kicking out the left tackle. I wouldn't want to move him. I want to keep him where he is, Peter. And I would be trying to get Trent Williams, although, again, it looks like he's going to stay where he has been for the past year in San Francisco with the 49ers. Last one. Duke Tobin, the Bengals director of player personnel. They've got $42.9 million in cap space and a franchise quarterback. Where should they be going?
Mike, there's been a lot of talk that the Bengals sitting at number 5 in the draft are going to take a franchise left tackle. And I'm not saying that's impossible. But I believe they're going to go hard in free agency after at least one tackle. And the two best tackles now are Darrell Williams of Buffalo and Alejandro Villanueva of the Steelers. My strong suspicion is that one of those two guys will end up on the Bengals so that they can now say to Joe Burrow, listen, you're not going to get beat up the way you were last year.
Oh, and they'd be sticking to the Steelers if they'd get Villanueva, who became a star in Pittsburgh and by all appearances will be walking away as a free agent. They need help to keep Joe Burrow healthy after the devastating knee injury in 2020. Let's take a break. Our draft today, the most intriguing characters over the coming week. It can be anybody, anyone we want, wide open. We'll do that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Decisions that I've had to make in my time with the Dallas Cowboys was to have Dak Prescott as a future regarding the quarterback position of the Dallas Cowboys. The truth is, most anything that I've ever been involved in that ended up being special, I overpaid for. Every time, to the end. Anytime I've tried to get a bargain, I got just that. It was a bargain in a lot.
Jerry Jones talking about getting a bargain and overpaying for bargains. That's not how you get a bargain. You overpay and you know it and you try to make it look like you didn't. Peter, you got a Jerry story.
Hey, 5 years ago, Mike, I covered the Cowboys draft, and this was the draft, remember, that they took Ezekiel Elliott early in the first round, and then after that, as the round got later and later and later, the Dallas Cowboys were desperately trying to trade for a young quarterback, Paxton Lynch, coming out in the draft that year. And so when they were aggressively trying to get it, it lasted 70, 80 minutes. They went 9, 10, 11 picks that they were trying to get him, and they couldn't. And then finally, the Denver Broncos trade up with Seattle and take Paxton Lynch. And Jerry Jones looked like his dog just died. And so the next day in his office, I sat with him. And Jerry, looking fatigued, as often he did, he basically talked about looking up at the ceiling that night and just being so angry that they didn't give a little bit more, that they didn't give. It turns out, if they had given an extra third-round pick, they could have gotten Paxton Lynch. And he used that exact phraseology to me. He said, the best things I've ever gotten as a businessman are things that often I've had to overpay for. And I thought of that yesterday when I was listening to, or this week, when I was listening to the Dak Prescott press conference, because he would have overpaid for Paxton Lynch and been horribly wrong, and they would have never drafted. They would have never drafted Dak Prescott in the fourth round that year. So in essence, the fact that he didn't overpay saved Jerry from himself.
And that's amazing when you think about it. And that's the lesson. Maybe you shouldn't overpay, and we'll see over the next few years whether or not the investment that was made, the overpayment in Dak Prescott, helps or hurts the Cowboys. All right, we're going to draft the most intriguing characters for the coming week. Anyone you want. Peter, you get to go first.
I'll say number one will be Shaq Barrett. And, you know, I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have made a very calculated decision in not placing the franchise tag on Shaq Barrett for the second time. And that calculated decision basically is that, look, there's a lot of pass rushers in this market. And we are hoping that nobody goes out on a limb and pays Shaq Barrett $18, $19 million a year because we really want him back. So to me, this is a calculated risk. And to me, when I look at all the guys who the Bucs needed to bring back this year, Shaq Barrett, in my opinion, was more important than Chris Godwin. They have depth at the receiver position. They don't have young depth or depth for the next 2 or 3 years at the pass rush position.
And Peter, if all else fails, with all these other pass rushers that are available in free agency this year, and there are plenty, you could go out and get maybe two or more, or get somebody else with the money that you would spend on Shaq Barrett. And Shaq Barrett was a value free agent a couple of years ago that that Jason Light and the Buccaneers found. So I think at a certain level, you have to have the confidence you can find a replacement for a lot less.
That's
than what
this
you
is
have
about.
To pay Shaq
You're
Barrett.
Right, Mike.
Yep.
Yeah.
For me, it's Urban Meyer, because here's a guy who's got, and we just talked last segment about all the cap space the Jaguars have. He's new to the NFL. We've seen a minor misadventure, maybe a major misadventure with the hiring and then the quick resignation of Chris Doyle. How is Urban Meyer going to handle himself with all this money to spend? It's not recruiting like it used to be. You have to bring the cash. Who's he going to be able to lure to Jacksonville, especially once the first wave goes by after the first couple of days? How can he convince guys to pick the Jaguars over other teams? Urban Meyer, I think, is going to be a very fascinating individual, good, bad, or otherwise, over the next few days.
My next one's going to be Joe Douglas. And Mike, you know, the fans of New York and the tabloids of New York don't want to hear when you've got $69 million of cap room and there's a lot of good players in this market. They don't want to hear, hey, listen, when we've spent $1 jillion on free agents in recent years, it never goes well. Did it go well with Le'Veon Bell? No. You know, did it go well with C.J. Mosley? No. But I think now this year, I think the Jets are going to say there's one or two players that we really think we can get better by trying to sign and maybe overpaying a little bit. I don't think Joe Douglas is going to go crazy, but I do think he's going to dip his toe into the first two or three days of free agency and go out and get at least one guy for pretty good money.
I'm going to stay with another GM, and I'm going to go to Chicago, where Ryan Pace has a quarterback decision to make. Is he going to try to go all in to get himself Russell Wilson? Could Deshaun Watson be persuaded to make the Bears a destination? Would Chicago try to get Deshaun from Houston? What are they going to do at quarterback? Is Trubisky going to be back? Could Nick Foles be traded to Philadelphia? This is a complete open slate for the Chicago Bears at the quarterback position. And Ryan Pace has his job in many respects riding on this next decision he makes at quarterback, Peter.
Yeah, you know, one of the ones that I'm curious about, and I don't even know that this team is going to do anything about this position, but I think it's interesting to watch what Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis do in New Orleans, because we're not positive that it's Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill. We think it probably is, but we don't know that for sure. And I'll be curious to see what are the signs, because even if they do absolutely nothing in free agency, you can read the tea leaves and say, aha, they're not doing anything for the rest of their team, because they know the rest of their team is okay. They're not happy about losing Trey Hendrickson, a really good young pass rusher. They're not happy about that. But this offseason, they believe, is going to be about taking their best shot at either the best quarterback they can get or to kind of retrench and to build around these two quarterbacks for this year.
And, you know, I had on my list Drew Brees. I'm not going to pick Brees because I think it fits with yours, but Brees hovers over this as well. We are more than 5 weeks removed from when Sean Payton said on this show, we're a week or a week and a half away from getting an answer on Drew Brees. We still haven't gotten one. And it becomes more conspicuous and more awkward if he hasn't announced his retirement before the start of the league year, where they have to go out and possibly re-sign Jameis Winston. And if they re-sign Jameis Winston, there's no room at the inn for Drew Brees at that point. But then Brees could walk through the door and say, hey, I'm only under contract for $1 million. Why isn't there a spot for me? So I think to the extent that he continues to hover unresolved over the Saints, that's fascinating as well. My next pick is going to be David Tepper. We talked about him earlier in the show. The Panthers owner wants a franchise quarterback, needs a franchise quarterback, and is determined to get a franchise quarterback. Is he going to implement a plan to get Deshaun Watson this week? What is he going to do with Teddy Bridgewater? Is he going to try to make a run with Russell Wilson? And he can't help himself. He's motivated to get that franchise quarterback, and I think we're going to see the Panthers do something significant, at least in an effort to get one, in the course of the next week. We're going to take a break and wrap up this Friday edition of PFT Live right after this. K Cam Newton will be returning to the New England Patriots. Multiple reports, a one-year deal. Conflicting reports about what it's worth. Shefty says close to $14 million. NFL Media says that Newton has a chance to make slightly more than he made last year. Well, last year, at the end of the day, he only made $3.7 million. $7 million in change was his high end. If he had reached all incentives, he didn't. So, look, whatever it is, even if it's $14 million, even if it's the full $14 million, Peter, when you consider that Dak Prescott's at 40 and Patrick Mahomes is at 45, Cam Newton is far below the top of the market.
You know, Mike, basically it's 7% of the Patriots' salary cap. So it's really not that big a deal. They certainly have the money to do it. And I think part of this is it's not a reward for his great play because he didn't play well. But it's a reward for him being a great team guy, a worker bee, and a great example for the rest of the roster. So I totally understand why the Patriots would do, you know, would pay him more than you would say, a legitimate backup type quarterback would make. He's going to play for the Patriots.
And I remember last year when they signed Cam Newton, I was told that one of the attractions to Newton is he brought an energy into the locker room that was far different from the Tom Brady energy. And they needed that energy at quarterback. They needed someone who would galvanize, even though it happened in a different way than Tom Brady galvanized the team, that they needed that force of personality. And when you look at the other options they had, Peter, you know, if that's a factor, who's really out there that's going to come through the door and have that cachet, that stature, literally and figuratively, that Cam Newton has? And oh, by the way, Cam Newton's 2-0 all time against Tom Brady, a quarterback he
will
face
at some point this year in New England.
Well, that's obviously why they did it. That's why they did it. Quarterback wins. They do matter. They matter to an extent, not nearly as much as some think. But the bottom line is, Newton's back. He will see Brady this year. The Patriots, I think, will be better for having Cam Newton for a second season, Peter.
Yeah, one other thing. Cam Newton and the New England Patriots will play in Charlotte this year. Another cool thing about the schedule.
Yeah, Bill Belichick's had a hard time with the Panthers. He's had a hard time beating Cam Newton. He gets to try to beat everyone else with Cam Newton this year again. That's it for this weekend. See you later today for PFTPM. Take care.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.